Get energized and excited to tell the world, hey, you can call me Catholic. Live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Orange County Catholic Radio present Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normanton.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, if there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, well, go there. That's where we should be headed, toward the light. St. Paul says to think about these things, and we like talking about them, too. That is our intention every Saturday on Call Me Catholic, to talk about the good stuff. I am Peggy Normanton, and you have arrived at Call Me Catholic, a light and hopefully lively hour of conversation intended to affirm, explore, and celebrate our Catholic identity in these modern times, so you can wake up and say to the world each and every day, oh, yeah, you can call me Catholic. Jimmy G is in the studio, my engineer and chief fact checker. Good day to you, sir.
Good day, Peggy. Are we aiming for excellence today?
We are always aiming for excellence. You know, we can aim as much as we want.
This
you know,
is
whether
true.
We arrive there is in God's
true.
Hands.
We fire those arrows and...
We don't measure. Yeah. We just do our best every
yeah.
day. Hey, Jimmy G, so are you getting anxious for the baseball season?
I'm always anxious for the baseball season.
I know you are.
This is the time of year where I'm paying close attention to see where the free agents sign and the trades and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So that's me.
I know. And every morning when I come in the studio, you somehow have got something about baseball up on your screen, just keeping track of the stats.
Guilty as charged.
Well, you know, last week you brought in and showed me a very cute piece of art that you created for
right.
your office. Why don't you tell our listeners about that?
Well, yeah, I'm a big baseball card guy. I have been for many, many years, and I've got some of my favorite cards. I was made like a nice color copy of some of these cards. There's like 18 of them, and I put them in a frame.
Yeah.
So it's not the actual cards, but...
But it looks like it. I mean, with the glass over it, it looks like it. And you've got Sandy Koufax.
Jackie Robinson.
Yeah. And Pee Wee Reese.
Yeah.
Right next to each other, which is kind of cool. It's very, very cool. Very nice
yeah.
little work of art. And it's fun to share our hobbies with people that, as they come into our homes or our offices and say, oh, yeah, I'm a baseball...
Because
yeah.
otherwise, I can't really enjoy the cards because I have them put away in boxes and stuff.
In vault.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, Jimmy G and I are coming to you, as you probably know, from high atop the Tower of Hope on the beautiful, handsome, stunning Christ Cathedral campus. And by the way, if you'd like to watch our show this day instead of just listening to it, and if you happen to be home and near a computer, you can go to our Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/callmecatholic. And Marvelous Matt, our call screener and overall studio assistant, has put up a link there. And if you tap that link, it'll take you to a page where you can watch us right here in the studio.
It's a marvelous link.
It's a marvelous invention, yes. And, you know, we've got... It's an intimate studio, but sometimes it's more fun to watch us than to just listen to us.
Yep.
If you like, you get to know us a little better. We are, by the way, the Diocese of Orange. We are here in Southern California, comfortably situated between Los Angeles and San Diego counties. So if you're ever in the area, come by and give us a wave or drop in. They do tours of the Christ Cathedral campus.
That's right.
The
construction is really going well, and I think 2019 is what they're aiming for.
They are. And even before it is completed, there is much to see here. There's a lot of artwork.
Exactly.
There's a lot of architecturally award-winning buildings and beautiful grounds.
Mm.
So give us a visit sometime. Now, as January comes to a close, and it's hard to believe we're heading into February and then Lent and then... Woo, we got to find a way to slow this calendar down.
It is amazing.
But before we leave this month of January, which is dedicated in our church to the sanctity of life, I want to acknowledge all the March for Lifers in Washington, D.C. and in their own hometowns who came out and stood up for life, for protecting life from the womb to the tomb. And these marches were really, really well attended, but wildly underreported.
Mm.
You know, I was reading this one article that literally said there were thousands of anti-abortion protesters on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. last week, which was like a week ago, Friday.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't thousands. There were hundreds of thousands
exactly.
of people, mostly women, who came out to take a stand for life on this 45th anniversary of the Roe v. Wade decision. And they were dominantly young women. I heard a woman who give a talk who had attended the March for Life in Washington, D.C., and she said, it was stunning how many young people, high schoolers, college students. It was like this generation is taking back life, you know.
Maybe, praise God.
Yeah. Very, very grateful to them and for our president and Speaker Ryan, who were the first, for the first time in the march's 45-year history, mm-hmm. spoke live to this peaceful crowd of pro-life activists. And I'm really sensing this sea change in America's attitude toward life in the womb, and I think it's coming from the younger generation. Very foundational, very promising. So thank you to everyone who courageously participated in some way in the March for Life 2018. Your voice is having an impact. And you know, sanctity of life isn't just about protecting the unborn. It's about honoring life in all stages and in all social standings, respecting life however you meet it. Now, this last Thursday, I had a great privilege of attending a talk given by Father Greg Boyle. He is the Jesuit priest who founded Homeboy Industries, very impactful resource for gang members who want to turn their lives around and want a new beginning. Homeboy offers jobs and counseling and hope. And when you hear Father Greg talk about his work and what he calls the power of radical kinship, you realize the impact love and mercy can have on a person, transformational for the giver and the receiver. Mm-hmm. And he always brings a couple of his homies to his talks to share their stories with the audience. And these homies talk about how they were redeemed by someone who gave them a chance, who treated them like a human being of worth. And I like the fact that I heard that testimony in this month when we are celebrating the sanctity of life, because whether you're called to march in the streets for the unborn or serve meals to the homeless or forgive a person who has wronged you, we are God's human race, and that makes every person we encounter worthy of some degree of respect in some way. We are all made in the image and likeness of God and are therefore sacred. Now, our guest today left the security of her home and community to help protect the lives of suffering mothers and children in rural Africa. Louise Allard is a nurse, a missionary, a human rights advocate, clearly, and she is the founder of Alliance for Life International, a faith-based outreach that builds up medical resources for people living on the fringes. And you know, there's a lot of fringe regions all over the world. Louise is going to share her fabulous story in just a minute. And then since we're talking about respect for life from conception to natural death in our Chatting with Catholics segment, I'm going to share the testimony of a young man whose first job out of college was at a Catholic cemetery and how that contributed to his respect for life and for a dignified death. But first up, it's our Call Me Catholic countdown of the week. Now I'm going to shift gears a little bit because next week, I'm also going to take a sip of water. It's dry. It's a little dry.
We're live here, Peggy. We're live.
Where do you press the drink water button? Okay, next week is Catholic Schools Week, and I do have a great affection and admiration for Catholic school system. I'm a graduate of Catholic schools, grammar school and high school. My kids went to, in some cases, Catholic school all their whole life, graduated from Catholic colleges.
Me too.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have much to celebrate. Catholic education has been proven in time, surveys, and studies to offer great advantages over other forms of educational systems. So I applaud and salute you, Catholic schools, during this week. Special Catholic Schools Week. Now, I thought it would be fun as a result of that to share in my Call Me Catholic countdown my top five memories of Catholic elementary school education. You like that? We're live here, Jimmy.
I would have to reach back a number of years to try to think of
It wasn't just yesterday. But what's fun is that, you know, grammar school memories are indelible in our minds. You know, you remember moments, you remember episodes. And, you know, when you grew up in a Catholic school, you have so many fun memories. Some of them silly, some of them very similar to what Catholic school kids are experiencing today. But some of the times have changed too. Cultural traditions in Catholic school, elementary schools have changed a little bit.
What's amazing is I've been able to reconnect to a lot of my elementary friends thanks to Facebook.
So, you know what? And here's another point. Now, I was going to bring this up later, that as a result of our Facebook page, Call Me Catholic Facebook page,
right.
And the fact that every birthday I post a picture of myself from my grammar school
right.
at St. Jerome's and St. Eugene's, some of my eighth grade colleagues, some of my classmates said, oh, that's you, Peggy
Amazing.
Humus, Normanton. And I graduated from you, Tony Arndt, Colleen Lyons, Maureen Tobin, Julie Harris, Tim
Amazing.
Lyons. You're all listening to Catholic radio, and that's very encouraging.
Very cool.
Okay,
very cool.
So here we go. This is my. These are my five favorite memories from Catholic school education.
The Call Me Catholic Countdown.
Okay, so number five is this is kind of the mid to late 60s, but I remember always being separated, girls and boys. I don't think they do that so much anymore, but the girls ate lunch in one area, the boys ate lunch in another area. You never had PE together. You know, even there would be times when Sister Marie Therese would come in and say, I'll take all the girls now, we're going to go have a little talk.
Ah.
And so there was a great separation. And so for me, having been raised in an all-girl household. I had only sisters and my mother and my aunt and my grandmother were around all the time. My poor dad had all these women to deal with. It was a, you know, it was kind of, boys were sort of exotic and that kind of contributed to the allure.
Interesting.
But anyway, so number five would be the boys and girls issue. Number four would be uniforms. I loved my uniform, little knife pleated green plaid uniforms. And I love seeing, kids in the market, in the post office, outside, walking home in their little Catholic school uniforms. So keep that up. Never give up the uniform. Never. Actually, in high school, I also wore a little tie. That was part of my high school Catholic uniform.
I had a white shirt. Boy, was that thing white.
Oh, yeah.
White, white, white.
Nice stiff collar, too, probably, right? Yeah. It probably wasn't white when you got home from school, though.
No.
Lots of stain repellent on that one. Okay, number three would be penmanship. I don't know that Catholic schools still do and teach the Palmer method, is what we called it, where you really have beautiful script. You can always tell a well-schooled Catholic kid by how well their penmanship is, mostly with my friends. You know, when I get an envelope, I think, oh, she must have gone to Catholic grammar school. She has very fine handwriting.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. That was kind of a hallmark of Catholic grammar schools, though, was the fact that they were really disciplined about teaching penmanship.
Yeah.
And we had cartridge pens. I don't think they have those anymore. Okay. Number two would be manners. I remember every time a teacher or an adult walked in the room, you stood up. Everybody would stand up. You'd get that little motion from sister, meaning everyone rise, please.
Right,
you'd say, good morning, Father McDonald, or good morning, Mrs. Smith. Remember that?
I do, actually.
And that's lovely.
You're jogging my memory.
Yeah, those are lovely manners to grow up with, and hopefully you still rise when an adult comes in the room. Okay, and number one would be, my number one memories are all the Marian devotions that you enjoyed in grammar school, the statuary, the May Day processions, the recitation of the rosary. That is still practiced practiced in Catholic grammar schools across America. It's such a beautiful thing to grow up with. And I think young children have a great, a tender affection for Mary because that's a wonderful time to make her very, very present in their lives.
Amen.
Okay, so remember to check out our Facebook page. And if maybe some of you went to St. Jerome's in the late 60s, you'll recognize me. Okay, there you have it. My top five Catholic school memories. Okay, coming up next is Louise Allard, a nurse with a stunning history of charitable works. She founded Alliance for Life International. They are a ministry that brings valuable medical resources to remote and underserved populations, especially mothers and babies in Africa. So please stay with us for that conversation. I am Peggy Normandin, and you are listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Celebrating, exploring, and restoring our Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hello there, and welcome back to Call Me Catholic. I am your host, Peggy Normandin, and we are dedicating our last show in January to the sanctity of life. That is what our church asks of us in this first month of every year, giving honor to the gift of life in all its various stages and social rankings. Our guest today has pledged her whole life to the sanctity of the human person, not just in January, but in every month of the year, not just here in the United States, but in the remote and rural regions of poorest Africa. Louise Allard is a nurse with an advanced degree in international human rights. In addition to practicing nursing for 45 years, Louise has traveled the world advocating women's human rights. In 1998, Louise founded Alliance for Life International, a Catholic Christian nonprofit human rights organization whose mission is to affirm and defend the equal value and dignity of all members of the human family from their earliest phase of development to their natural end. And that is why Louise Allard is our guest today in this month where our church honors the sanctity of life. Louise Allard, welcome to Call Me Catholic. Am I pronouncing your last name correct?
Yes,
Allard?
Yes. Yes, you are.
Because you were
born
in Canada, so
yes,
it must have a little
right.
French twist.
The French way is Allard. The D is silent.
Allard. I should know that. I have a little bit of French. So Louise, you have two passions, nursing and human rights. How do you find yourself helping suffering mothers and babies in Africa right now?
Well, at the moment, we have a pregnancy resource center in Kampala, which is the capital of Uganda. So we opened that center in 2012. In addition, we go to the schools and churches, and our passion is to educate the youth in a program we call Sexual Integrity Education, just to prepare the youth to focus on their studies and to delay sexual activity till marriage, which is the best structure for parenthood.
Well, I definitely want to get into that because that is fascinating how you take that concept to a different culture. But first, Louise, I want to ask you, and by the way, I'm going to throw out the phone number right now to our listeners. If you think you'd like to jump into our conversation, you might have a question or comment for our very esteemed guests. Give us a call at 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. So you were born in Canada. You have come here to the United States with your nursing degree and all. But how did you get to Africa? How did that even enter into your sphere of reality and interest?
Right. Okay. Well, I think the answer is multifaceted. It started in Catholic schools, and
there you go.
You remember? I think the Catholic school gave me an international heart because even when I was a little girl of 9 years old, I knew I wanted to marry someone from a different country, from a 5,000-year civilization. So, you know, that must have come from Catholic school.
That kind of narrows the field a little bit, doesn't it, Louise?
It does. I ended up doing that, actually. And so, and also I was buying little cards that had Chinese children on the card. You remember 25 cents a card? And that would mean you would pray for that child.
So. Well, you know, and I have to embarrassingly admit that the drive, they used to call it the pagan baby drive. It was just certainly not acceptable today, but that was literally what we called it. But you were collecting money for children in third world countries.
That was for evangelism in China. Mm-hmm. So we participated in that, and I was just very focused on that as a little girl. So an international heart. And then there was another type of surrender when I had just founded Alliance for Life in 1998. I was sitting at my new desk, and there was a basket, and there were, like, supplies, office supplies in the basket. And I told the Lord, I said, this represents my life, this basket, my relationship with you, my relationship with my husband. And at that time, we were having difficulties. And then my family, my children, my school, my work, now the new Alliance for Life. I said, you know, this is just like my basket of life. You know, Lord, you could do whatever you want with this basket. You know my situation, my marital situation, and you know all my life. And I would like to devote myself more to Alliance for Life, but really you would have to create the circumstances for that. So anyway, you have my life there. You could do whatever you want to do with it. You know, mix it up. Do whatever you want to do with it. I'm totally surrender. I would even go to Africa.
So that you threw that in as just a throwaway comment. You didn't think he was really listening.
Africa meant total surrender.
I see.
Because Africa was scary to me. Very scary to me. I would not think about going to Africa
in 1998. So at this point, you'd never been to Africa.
Never, and I would not think about going to Africa, the further thing from my mind, because it made me scared. Mm-hmm. I was scared of diseases, let's say. You know, strange diseases, I would say.
Well, it's very exotic.
It was. Even for my international heart, it was too exotic. And so anyway, I threw it out there. But I ended up in Africa. I believe that prayer was birthed by the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. And I did 5 years later. I ended up in the Congo.
So how do you end up in the Congo? I mean, you get a plane ticket and you go over there. You start walking around. I mean, do you have contacts there? Do you read an article that says they need something?
What happened is that I joined a group. It's called Doctors on Call for Service.
Okay.
I also attended at that time Saddleback Church. Okay, because I was raised Catholic, but then after that, I was nothing for 17 years, from age 17 to 34.
And you were?
I was nothing.
And Rick, the minister was Rick Warren.
You're right.
Very well known, yes.
You're right. Then I went back to church through that evangelical world and everything, and I found myself back in the Catholic faith, but later on, I think I was 59.
It's a journey.
Yes, you're right. Back to my Catholic faith. But during that time, I was attending Pastor Rick Warren, and he was encouraging us to go throughout the world, really.
Go spread the gospel.
Short mission trips and bring our skills to these areas. So anyway, I joined a group called Doctors on Call for Service.
And I was a nurse. So you have
medical
training.
Have called each other nurses on call for service. But anyway, I went with, we were five nurses, and we did continuing education in the Congo.
Wow.
So this was my first trip to Africa. And then I returned 4 years later in 2007 Uganda and Kenya with a group that was doing HIV/AIDS support group.
Yes, very important.
2007 and 2008. And in 2008, I decided that to establish my own work in the name of Alliance for Life International in Uganda.
This, and did when you arrived at the Congo, the first your first trip to Africa, did it feel like, yes, this is what I've been called to do? Was it an immediate connection?
Yes, but I believe that the Lord was instrumental in proving that. First of all, Congo was very unsafe to go. The State Department in April 2003, we were supposed to go, and we could not go. It was so unsafe. So we went in November 2003, and we didn't ask the State Department. We didn't. We just say we're going.
Okay.
But as we were talking, preparing for the trip, we were at a restaurant 3 weeks before the trip. There was this young man sitting next to us, next to the five women, talking about the Congo very excitedly, you know. So he said, "What do I hear? You're going to the Congo?" We said, "Yes." And so he said, "Okay, I'll go with you." So and I said to him, "Well, we're leaving in 3 weeks. We're going to be gone for 3 weeks, and it's going to cost you $3,000. Can you remember that?"
The Holy Trinity of statistics right there.
All right. So he said, "Yes." So what happens is that his name was Tony. He was 27 years old. He was a Marine. He was stationed at Camp Pendleton here in San Clemente. And he attended Saddleback, which we didn't know. Saddleback is a big church.
It is it's a mega church.
So Tony says, "You need me, and I'm coming with you." So anyway, that was Friday night. Monday morning, he asked for his time off, and he was granted, and he came with us.
Wow.
So we had, where we stayed, there was a guard there at the compound.
So you had your bodyguard with this guy, Tony.
We had two bodyguards with big rifles everywhere we went.
Wow.
We had 24-hour coverage at the home where we lived, as well as in the field, in jeeps. We traveled in jeeps, and we needed it. Since that time, you know,
gives you a little
this was
security.
My first trip. And that removed all fears. I felt like God will provide for my safety and everything else.
And what did you do there initially? What was the work that you were
continuing
offering?
Education for nurses.
Okay.
So we were teaching nurses.
Okay. And there was no language problem?
No, because, well, certainly not for me anyway, because I speak French.
Right.
And the Congo.
It's French.
So is French. The other workers, we use interpreters.
Okay.
Mostly.
Yeah. So it started out as continuing education for nurses, which is something that you're very comfortable with because that was what your degree was in. Then how did that segue into working with the mothers and the babies and the teenagers?
You're right. Well, that's my pro-life activism. Okay. Since 1984, I've been very, very involved in the pro-life movement. And it stems from experiences when I was just 20 years old, out of nursing school, studied in a large pediatric hospital in Montreal. So very pediatric nurse, you know, loving children. And then I was 20 years old, and two friends, my best friends, came to me and say, we're going to have an abortion. And I was not prepared for that. And like I said, I had abandoned my faith at age 17, so I was not prepared. The only thing I said to each of them, it came 6 months apart, is that, "Are you sure you want to do this?" That was the only thing I said. So they went ahead with that, and the only thing I did is visited them afterward. But it stayed with me, even though I didn't live with it in a sense that I put this in the back of my mind.
It was a little cloud that stuck there in your conscience.
What happened is when in 1984, when I became educated about pro-life, the life in the womb, the reality of abortion, documentaries, writings and everything, I was horrified. I was horrified. And still that did not come back to me, this memory, but I became very, very involved and very, I would say, obsessed with it. Until 15 years later, in year 2000, I asked the Lord, "Why am I so obsessed with this. I can never do enough. I did even my human rights degree to defend the rights of the preborn child.
This is so fantastic, Louise. We've got a lot more that we're going to discuss with Louise Allard and human rights. She's a human rights advocate, missionary teacher, and founder of Alliance for Life International, a ministry that defends and protects mothers and babies, among other human beings, through its pro-life medical outreach to even the most remote areas of Africa. If you have a question or a comment, join our conversation. Marvelous Matt will patch you through. It's 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. Maybe you'd like to ask her about the medical resources that she's putting in place in Africa. Maybe you'd like to talk to her about the Teen Integrity Program she's teaching over there. I know you have a comment for her. The number is 714-282-6034. I am Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Lots more to come, so stay with us.
Helping you navigate the daily struggles and blessings of life. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hello, friends. Thanks for tuning in to Call Me Catholic today on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. I am Peggy Normandin with a special guest during this month when we honor the sanctity of life. Louise Allard is a nurse whose passion for human rights, all human beings' rights, has taken her to China and Rome and the Congo in service of suffering mothers and babies who have been otherwise neglected and ignored. In 1998, Louise founded Alliance for Life International, a ministry that teaches and provides for human populations that are often discarded or just overlooked by the rest of the world. Hers is a fascinating and beautiful story of answering God's call to serve, in ways that sometimes really dramatically life-changing to our own lives. In fact, Louise Allard will be sharing that story with the Magnificat audience here in Southern California on Saturday, February 17th. Louise is speaking to our Diocese of Orange Magnificat Women's Prayer Breakfast in a couple of weeks. And if you'd like to attend that, we'll put the information up on our Facebook page. If you'd like to join our conversation right now, you can give us a call at 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. So, Louise, your organization, Alliance for Life International, has brought pregnancy resource centers to remote regions of Africa. You've taught teen sexual integrity and written a human rights bill for the unborn. What has been the biggest challenge you've faced in this ambitious plan to lift up the sanctity of life in the world?
You know, you're in another country. The medical care over there is certainly substandard. And so sometimes there are experiences that you're exposed to because of that. And so I've had challenges over there, but the Lord has preserved my life, I would say. So, for example, just one, I teach natural family planning. I do teacher training 3 days. And
here in California.
I do it in California, but I do it in Uganda also.
Interesting.
And so one time I was, it's a little bit like today. I was handing a microphone and I was handing this microphone and I had a severe electric shock. And, the next day, they told me that this was very unusual, so there should not be a problem. Well, the next day, I sustained one also because I had touched a metal door. Well, apparently, the electrical were not grounded properly.
Oh.
And someone from the audience rushed to me to remove the microphone as I was being shocked in the right arm. And he fell himself. He became shocked himself. He fell. There was such a commotion. But we did not suffer from sequela. We did not. And I continued the teaching. A couple of minutes later, we were teaching.
Back to business.
Back to business. Not using the microphone anymore. But you see,
you're not in the United States anymore.
No, you are not. You are not. So certainly that this is something, but the Lord will preserve you. If you're called to go, for sure, there are always resources and the Lord will preserve your life.
Well, you know, I love the fact that not only do you bring these medical resources to Africa, but you're really teaching them the respect for life.
Yes.
And so we were talking in the last segment about the fact that you went through a period of kind of spiritual ambivalence. And yet when your friends went to have an abortion as a pediatric nurse, you knew this was fundamentally wrong. I mean, you spend your days preserving the life of babies and you see two friends dismissing or discarding it. And eventually that contributed to your ferocious pro-life stance. How does it differ to represent and promote that message, advocate that message here in the United States to your audience in Africa? Is it received differently by those cultures, two different
All
cultures?
All right. Well, here in the United States, it's legal since 1973. So when we speak to a woman about abortion, she's abortion bound, like we say. Okay, she knows it's legal. She thinks it's her option. So we really have to work with her so that she is willing to see other alternatives. In Uganda, it's not so cut and dry. It's a more family-oriented culture. Children are very important. You have several children, average seven per, you know, per family. But, you know, she also finds herself in a very unfavorable circumstances to have a child. So she may think about having an illegal abortion because it is illegal in Uganda. Mm-hmm. And she would pop a pill mostly. That's what they would do and begin a chemical abortion. That's really. So she's very much at risk for that.
Which is so dangerous.
Yes. Especially that they're not doing it during the first few weeks of pregnancy. Sometimes they're waiting later on to do it, and that becomes more dangerous. The circumstances are a little bit different, but the teaching, putting them in touch with the unborn child, mm-hmm. you know, giving them a lot of support first.
Do you have ultrasound machines over there?
No, but what we do is we use models of fetal development mm-hmm. through, you know, from very early on till 9 months of pregnancy. We have a child that she's able to hold in her hands, you know, like models.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that
very tactile
yes,
and organic.
You're right.
So they receive the message and understand the message more intrinsically that abortion is wrong.
Yes.
It's not a natural.
They know that. It's not natural. It's not like here where it is more accepted.
Where it's endorsed.
Yeah.
How do they receive the concept of natural family planning? That's a whole other message that you're bringing to them.
You're right. Well, first of all, you know, contraceptives or birth control has been available in Africa since 1958 in Kenya, the first clinic opened. So, and we've been providing this free of charge for many, many years. So they're very familiar with that. And mostly what is used is the IUD and Depo-Provera shots. Well, whatever these methods are, hormonal contraceptives, they have side effects. So the women will begin to use that, and then she will have side effects. And the husband is not in favor of that. They like big families, by the way. And so she has no support to continue, and there is nothing to alleviate those symptoms that is troubling her. So therefore, she stops using and continues to have babies, actually, until we come and we offer natural family planning. And therefore, it is accepted. It's much more natural for them to access a natural method.
It puts you more in touch with your body.
Yes.
And
yes.
More aware of your cycles. And,
sure.
And so they're receptive to that.
Yes. They're not so technologically oriented as in the United States.
Right.
Where I'm going to pop a pill.
Pharmaceutically dependent. Yes.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the third component of this package that you bring to them and lift their lives up with is the idea of sexual integrity for teens,
yes.
For the young audience. Like,
right.
How do you really preserve, you know, your moral sexual integrity?
You're right.
Is that a tough sell?
No, it is
okay.
Not. Although, you know, most of our teaching occur in the city of Kampala, which is the big capital. So therefore, Western influence is definitely there. We deal with that. So it's not a hard sell.
Do you have young people teaching this? Who are the people that are they people that you bring on from your team?
Exactly. My team is a natural family planning teacher. She's about 35, 36 years old. Mm-hmm. And the other one, Nora, that goes into school. Actually, both of them go into school. But Nora is younger. She's in her 20s. So, no, she's very much in touch with the youth.
That's awesome. So
yes.
And are you also helping to train adults that are residents, that are natives of that area, how to teach it? I mean, do you sort of introduce it to the parents, too, so that these are tools for keeping your teen safe
yes.
from promiscuity?
Actually, the adults that attend are the teachers.
Okay.
The teachers always attend. The school teachers always attend our presentation, and we encourage them to reinforce any chimes they get. But so far, we have not you know, train other adults than the one that we have at our employment,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people, I mean, it's a gift. It's a calling to,
yes,
teach that. So what are some of the other projects that Alliance for Life International is working on over there right now?
Okay. Well, right now, we're involved in a medical project. We had one earlier on in 2008 when I started going and doing my own work over there through Alliance, and it was to equip a hospital to do cesarean sections, mm-hmm, because we were very concerned about mothers and babies dying surrounding birth. And so the government, the Department of Health Services, just suggested that I equip a hospital to do C-section. That project took 2 years.
Is it the equipment or is it teaching the doctors how to do it?
Actually, it's the equipment.
Okay.
They have good doctors. The problem is to have a doctor that will live in that village and do cesarean section when they're needed. A C-section is an emergency procedure, mm-hmm, if you want to save the life of the mother and the child. And so therefore, it took us 3 years to find doctors that would be available to be on call to do the procedure. So this was in from 2008 to 2011, let's say, because we fixed the doctor's house also over there.
Oh. You mean you gave him, you improved his living conditions?
You're right.
Oh,
you're right. So that the doctors would live there.
Yeah.
You know, but
make it attractive.
Yes.
Well, isn't sterility an issue? I mean, keeping everything sterile, the equipment.
Sure.
Yeah, the conditions.
Sure, sure. And so we had to make several improvements to the hospital even before we would focus on the operating room and equipping it. Building walkways and providing lots of equipment and, they had other needs as well. So since you're there, you do it. We painted the whole hospital inside and out, changed all the mattresses, provided bedding for 30 beds. So there was a lot of structural improvement before we were able to attack the operating room and make it usable.
Where are your funds coming from? Are they coming from this country, from other countries, from churches, from just private individuals?
So our funds come mostly from the United States. So we've been established since 1998
right,
as an organization. And so our funds come from private donors. We do not have grants, not at this time anyway. It's not that we do not accept that, although we would be very cautious with that.
Well, it seems like this is work that is so aligned with the Catholic Church's teachings and hopes for humanity.
Yes.
Do you get any church-based funding or...
We do not get it directly from the church, but we get it from members.
From parish
from
members.
From church members.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, definitely. Most of our supporters are Christians, Catholic Christians or evangelical Christians. Yes.
Well, it's so beautiful that you were called by God to take this huge leap of faith in using your passion as a nurse, your passion for life, and applying it to an area that was so completely foreign to you. What is the future now? What are you looking for? What do you feel God is using you to create, to promote, to advocate now?
Right. Well, there will always be a hospital project while I am in Uganda because there is so much need. And so, therefore, we started a hospital project 2 years ago, and in a region where they have very little resources, medical resources, and so, therefore, there is one doctor for 42,000 people. Just to put it in context, here in the in California, you have one doctor for 200 people.
Yeah.
In the U.S., one for 400, and over there, one for 42,000. So... naturally, it's hard to
fathom.
Put your head around
yeah,
that.
It's amazing.
So therefore, what we decided to do is a project with the Catholic Church over there in that western region of Uganda. And the Catholic Church has given us 100 acres of land.
Uh-huh. Nice.
And to attract doctors, we will work with Uganda Martyr University School of Medicine.
Okay.
That will provide the teaching for doctors to become specialists. Like OBGYN, pediatrics,
and
surgery.
These are native doctors.
Yes.
These aren't doctors coming from other
yes.
parts of the world.
And so Uganda Martyr will train the doctors to become specialists at the new hospital which we want to build. It's not built yet. We're in the planning and fundraising of this
But that's
facility.
Very cool for them to know that they will be in a new hospital. I mean, that's
You're
kind
right.
of an enticement right there.
That's the enticement is, yes, to attract doctors. It's a modern hospital. We are planning a modern hospital. And to get their degree, their specialty degree.
Right.
So that would be their incentive for them to come.
Absolutely. I think you're going to get a great response to that. We are going to go to Denise, who's calling us from Columbus, Ohio, with a question for you. Hello, Denise. Welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Hello, and bonjour, Louise.
Bonjour, Louise.
Bonjour, Denise.
My passion is also pro-life, and
yes.
I thank you for your passion. I live in Columbus, Ohio.
Yes.
However, I grew up in a town in Ontario, north of Toronto.
Okay.
And I still have family in Canada and visit often. And I, you know, I see the path Canada is going with their pro-abortion-driven agenda. And, you know, Prime Minister and Cabinet have certainly their agenda.
Yes,
and
yes.
I just wonder if you have any facilities, teaching facilities in Canada.
Good question, Denise.
If we have teaching facilities in Canada, no, we are not involved in Canada at the moment. Our areas of involvement really is the United States, mostly California and Uganda.
Maybe that's your calling, Denise.
But I'm very much aware of what's going on over there. I go to Canada twice a year, and I know that Mr. Trudeau is very pro-abortion.
Yes.
And considers himself Catholic, which is, you know.
Right. I know. It's such a Catholic country. That's true of other countries, too, like France. Well, Denise, thank you for calling, and thank you for your concern. And we'll just pray that somebody will take the lead up there in the north of our
And there
our
is
northern
a pro-life
neighbors.
Movement there. There is a growing pro-life movement,
Probably started and fueled by young people, because I really see this is where the new pro-life energy is coming from. They get it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Denise.
Thanks for calling, Denise. We really appreciate it. Hey, I just want to remind you that if you want to hear Louise Allard speak, she is speaking to our Magnificat Women's Group here in Orange County on February 13th. And I will put all that information up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/callmecatholic, so you can listen to Louise, you can follow her. And your website, again, is Alliance for Life.
INT, that stands for International.
Okay.
Alliance for Life, INT.org.
Okay. Wow. There's so much more that we could cover, and it's fascinating that you're doing this work and you're getting so much done. I mean, if you, sitting at your desk with your idea for, you know, kind of answering God's call, could have imagined that, you know, 10 years later, here you would be building hospitals, recruiting new doctors in Africa and making such an amazing difference in that culture of life over there. You probably would have said, no, that's not me. That's going to somebody else.
It happens gradually.
Yes, it does. Yes. It does. Well, your testimony is certainly inspiring all of us to listen to and pay attention to that basket of utensils on our desk that may have a message that God's going to work through that. Hey, Louise Allard, thank you for being with us today to share your inspiring story and your work with Alliance for Life International. I pray God continues to give you the fortitude and courage and underwriting and energy that you need to keep on doing what you're doing for life. And remember, you can meet Louise in person at the February 17th Magnificat Prayer Breakfast here in the Diocese of Orange. They get the best speakers there. Thank you again, Louise.
Thank you, Peggy. It was an honor. Oh, it was a pleasure.
And God bless
you.
Keep up the good work. We'll be praying for you.
Thank you.
Hey, I want to take just a minute to make a public service announcement here. If you want to carry EWTN with you wherever you go, then you need to download the EWTN app. If you have a smartphone, you go to the app store there on the front of your phone and search for EWTN in the app listings. It's free. Download and boom, you got all the EWTN programming at your fingertips. Live TV and radio streams, audio and video on demand. EWTN news and program schedules and lots of prayers and devotionals. So everything you need to nourish your spiritual life wherever you are. It's so well designed. I have it on my phone, of course, and it's very easy to use. So like I said, you can find it for free through your phone app store, or you can go to EWTNApps.com and get instructions online. It's very, very cool. So we've been embracing the theme of the sanctity of life on our show today, and we've learned that it can be, it's not just just the preborn, although that is certainly a huge priority in our Sanctity of Life movement, but it's also the end of life terms. Let's give that the respect and the dignity that every human person deserves in the process of dying. And so I thought I would share this conversation that I had with a young man last year sometime who shared with us his experience of working at a Catholic cemetery and that how that really impacted his respect for life and for the dignity of death. So have a listen.
I had graduated from Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington in the spring of 2008 and had grown up in Southern California, but was still interested in pursuing a life in the Pacific Northwest. I was interested in pursuing a job in marketing or advertising in the region. I knew there were a lot of creative agencies coming out of the Seattle and Portland area. After graduating with a degree in liberal arts, I had moved to Portland to try and find a job. Had some interviews set up in the fall of 2008. It was a really difficult market. There was a limited time that I could live in that city while looking for a job. And as my time was ending, I saw a job available with the Archdiocese of Oregon as a marketing coordinator for their Catholic cemeteries. I am Catholic. I was raised Catholic. I attended Catholic school my entire life and thought I had a pretty strong understanding of the faith. I was an altar boy. I had attended Vacation Bible School as a kid. I was a lector into college. I was a Eucharistic minister. I had gone on retreats. However, I realized when I was applying for the job, I had no background or understanding of the dying part of being Catholic. And it was coming down to the final weeks before I had to make a decision to either move home or start to pursue a different career path. After a few successful interviews, I was offered the job with the Archdiocese as the marketing coordinator, and I was incredibly excited to have a job, but also to open up this first career out of college with the church. There was certainly a sense of comfort that came with that, knowing that in a city where I had no immediate family, I was going to be working with a community that I'd always been a part of throughout my life. However, a lot of that comfort went away on my first day when I reported to a small stone building in the middle of a beautiful cemetery. I had never been to a graveside service at that point. I was equally excited for my first day of employment after graduation and terrified that I was entering a world that I had very little background in. I was reminded what an important step this is in an individual's life when they begin to plan someone's burial. Expected or unexpected, it is an incredible shock and a life-changing moment for a family or an individual. And we are responsible for this. My job at the cemetery was two responsibilities. One was to go out to the parish community to share the message of what the cemetery's offerings were, the benefits of the Catholic cemeteries, and educate them on the burial process. So there was an education moment for me about really learning about the value and the importance and the sacredness of a Catholic burial. The other part of the job was to work with families and arrange all of the specifics around a burial. In Oregon, there were three Catholic cemeteries, and my position as a marketing coordinator was involved in all three of them. I can remember at one of our cemeteries, there was a very strong Vietnamese population. They were very, very active in the burial process. It was a beautiful ceremony that was not what I had traditionally seen at the other cemetery that I spent most of my time at. It was always an elaborate celebration at the gravesite where there would be a meal and they would, each individual that attended the service would take turns placing a handful or a shovelful of dirt on the grave and take an active role in the burial process. And as an employee, we were always instructed to be present but not involved. However, in the Vietnamese community, we were invited as employees to honor this person and sharing in their meal with them at the graveside, placing a handful of dirt. I loved that I felt their grief and shared their grief with them. I can recall on every Friday, one of our frequent guests would be a gentleman who would always bring flowers to his bride. That's what he called her. They'd been married for many years, and she passed away early, and yet he would visit every Friday and bring her flowers. And we knew him by name, and we would greet him, and we'd have a vase ready. And it was a community that I realized was so important for those individuals that had lost someone. I worked for the Archdiocesan Cemeteries in Oregon for just over 2 years. It was such an enriching period, and now I am working in advertising and marketing in Portland. I am employed at a very growing and successful ad agency, and yet I will always have the cemetery to thank for that, because they helped ground me starting out in those formative career years. And whenever I share my resume, everyone stops and says, "Let's talk about the cemetery. What was that about?" And they're curious. They're interested. They see Oregon Catholic cemeteries and they say, I want to hear about that. I don't want to hear about your other agency experience." And it's so fun and enriching to share about that experience, because it has become what I thought was just a job to help me sustain a life in a city I wanted to live in. It has helped me grow my career and gave me an incredible background into what a professional environment is, and also how to live a Catholic identity at work.
Well, thanks for that testimonial, Frank. That was awesome. I think we covered it all today, Jimmy G. Birth, death, and everything in between.
Hey, just about.
Check out our Facebook page and give us a like, facebook.com/callmecatholic. We'll see you again next week, same day, same time, for more good news from our good faith. Until then, I'm Peggy Normandin, but you can call me Catholic.
You've been listening to Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin, live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California. Call Me Catholic is a co-production of EWTN Radio and Orange County Catholic Radio. Heard weekly on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.